four games, four nail-biting tournaments. ACB presents the ACB Open, a series of four tournaments at allinplay.com. Bluff your best at five-card draw poker. Catch the craze of crazy eights. Raise the stakes with Texas Hold'em. Strain your brain with Tag the Anagram game. Whether you're a word whiz or a card sharp, we've got you covered. The fun starts Saturday, September 6th with five-card draw and continues every Saturday in September. So come on down and ante up at allinplay.com.
Terratech's accessible digital lifestyle is a hot topic and getting hotter. Here's your chance to add some sizzle to your life by participating in our online survey and enrolling to win a complete digital lifestyle makeover. Here's what you could win. An Asus 2-pound netbook PC with 1 gigabyte of main memory and an 8 gigabyte SSD drive fully equipped for accessible wireless networking, including Saratech's award-winning System Access screen reader. A complete Saratech software as service package including System Access Mobile, 4 years of System Access Mobile Network and Neo Speech, a Humanware Victor Stream audiobook player, a Creative Lab Zen Stone MP3 player, and one copy of any Mobile Speak screen reader for your mobile device, courtesy of Code Factory. The Digital Lifestyle Makeover is worth more than $2,000, and all you have to do is answer a few really easy questions. Of course, you don't have to wait to win to get access and be accessible. If you're one of the first 100 people to sign up for Saratech's 4-year software as service package, we'll send you a Zen Stone MP3 player at no charge. For more information, please visit Saratech on the web at www.saratech.com. Access life with Saratech's digital lifestyle. Start your makeover today. The winner of our Summer Sizzle contest will be drawn on the Sunday after Labor Day on ACB Radio's Marlena program, and the winner must be at home to win.
This coverage of the WBU General Assembly in Geneva is coming to you from ACB Radio World with the support of Vision Australia. To find out more about Vision Australia, you're welcome to visit us at visionaustralia.org.
Vision Australia, blindness and low vision services.
From Geneva, Switzerland, this is live coverage of the 7th General Assembly of the World Blind Union. And now, here are your hosts, Chrissy Cochran and Marlena Lieberg.
Well, welcome indeed, dear listener, welcome. Here we are. Yes, that music again. It tells you they're at the 7th General Assembly of the World Blind Union. We're about to start in about 5 minutes' time, but I think we'll have enough time to quickly run through the program. All right.
Okay. Let's see how far we can
now
get.
Then. 9:30 a.m.
9:30 a.m. to 10:10 a.m. is a keynote presentation. Federationism in the World, in the plenary session. The session chair is William Rowland. The session speaker is Mark Maurer. 10:10 a.m. to 10:30 a.m. Presentation of the candidates for WBU president. The session chair is Susan Spungen.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking for the next thing.
Oh, it's on the other page, isn't it? Yes.
Yeah. Nomination. Sorry, folks. I've been up since 3:30 at a conference call for my own affiliate. Nomination committee chair Philip Baum. 10:30 to 12 is presentation of regional reports here in the plenary room. The session chair is Susan Spungen. 10:30 to 10:40 is regional reports, Africa. Session speaker, Paul Tezanu, T-E-Z-A-N-O-U. 10:40 a.m. to 10:50 a.m., regional report, session speaker, Amer, A-M-E-R, Makarem, M-A-K-A-R-E-M. And we're about to start, so we'll pick up some more as soon as we can. You're listening to the 7th General Assembly of the World Blind Union in Geneva,
we've got some housekeeping announcements.
ACB
Let's
Radio World.
Thank you, William. Ladies and gentlemen, as you may have noticed, the seat order changed a bit. So the space with the different countries is allocated for delegates. If you don't find space with your country, please move to back in the observer seats. Then all speakers are required to come early to the stage if they are going to speak during the sessions. We have a presidency of 8 seats, so usually the people should simply fit in there or sit in the first row where the speakers are. As we have a lot of regional meetings today, please be ready in time to come to the front. Thank you. Then I would like to ask you to turn off all cell phones. If you would need some private conversation, please leave the plenary session to allow the others to follow the session. Then we were informed that there are some Russian and Arabic people who would need interpretation. So I don't know if some delegations with those languages are here with an interpreter. If yes, we could ask these interpreters to go in one of the cabins and interpret for all people who listen to Russian and Arabic. If there are some interpreters, please come here to the front during the lunch break that we can show you the cabin and inform everybody accordingly. The election, if there is some election, they will be held in room 8, which is on the second floor of this building. If you would like to have a shuttle back to the airport when you leave, you have to announce your name, your hotel, your date of departure, and your hour of departure at the registration desk not later than Wednesday noon. Even if you already sent this information, please do it again at the reception, and we cannot accept any details after Wednesday noon. The leisure activities for tomorrow is the Swiss night held in the city. Tonight we have different regional meetings going on. For your information, the region, the European region, will be here in the plenary room. The African region will be in room 5 and 6 on floor 3. The Latin American region will be in room 18 on floor minus 1. The Asian region in room 15, also on floor minus 1. The Asia Pacific region in room 14 on level 2. North American and Caribbean region in room 16 on floor minus 1. And the international members in room 17 on floor minus 1. Then the microphones cannot be moved closer to you. The wires are too short. So if you have to say something, we kindly ask you to move closer to the microphone. And then I got the last information. One person lost yesterday, either in the afternoon or in the evening, a wallet and a mobile phone. So if somebody found this, please bring it to the reception here at the Congress Center. Thank you.
Thank you, Nadia. I'd like to remind delegates that we are in session, so we do need quiet in the room, please. I'd like to inform the meeting that we are making an experiment today. You've all heard of audio description. And audio description is sometimes carried out in meetings and conferences to give extra information. Joel Snyder of the United States has volunteered his services, and we will today be making an experiment with audio description in our General Assembly. You will then hear Joel talking over in the quiet moments, giving extra information, and we ask the interpreters to interpret that information for the Spanish and French speakers. I'd also like to remind you that there is a special World Bank meeting on their development programs that will be in this hall on Thursday at 8:30. It will last for 1 hour prior to the 10 o'clock commencement of the meeting. It's an open meeting of the World Bank, and you're invited to that. Before we have our keynote, I'm going to invite the chairperson of the Credentials Committee, Jim Sanders, to provide us with his final report.
Thank you, President. This is the final report of the Credentials Committee. The number of registered countries here at the convention is 119, 119. The number of delegates in the room is 229. The number of verified and valid proxies, 98. In addition, we have 7 registered international members, 8 honorary life members, 6 table officers, all of whom are eligible to vote, bringing the number of validated votes to 348. That's 348 eligible votes. The report, the names of the voting delegates, and the assigned proxies, where appropriate, have been provided to Mr. Jeff Gibbs, returning officer. Thank you, President.
Thank you, Jim, for a job well done, which I think does deserve some applause. That means a slight increase on Cape Town, where we had 114 countries and 330 votes. Probably, therefore, the largest General Assembly of the World Blind Union. Our keynote this morning will be presented by Dr. Mark Maurer, President of the National Federation of the Blind in the United States. As I've travelled the world as your president, I've come across the term federationism and federation in many countries, from Sweden to India to the United States and elsewhere. It means a certain way of organizing. It means a certain philosophy. And while we attend in the World Blind Union discussions to issues of concern and importance to us, this morning we are turning our minds to our philosophy of blindness. And I can think of no one better than Dr. Maurer to present us with thinking that we can integrate into our movement. It's been my pleasure on 3 occasions to address the National Federation of the Blind, and this morning this happens in reverse, and I'm delighted that Mark has accepted. The floor is yours, Dr. Maurer.
Thank you, Mr. President, and members of the World Blind Union and distinguished guests. The scientist Stephen Hawking tells us that scientific systems fall into 2 categories, the predictable and the chaotic. No matter how complex the system may be, if the outcome is determinable in advance, this system is closed, predictable, and repetitive. If the outcome is not determinable in advance, the scientific name is chaos. In the not-too-distant past, those things that might be expected of blind people were almost entirely predictable and repetitive, known before they occurred. However, some of us have broken the old system, and we intend to break it further. Some of us intend to embrace chaos, to create results that have never been imagined until we put our minds and our hearts to the effort. The name that I have for these intrepid individuals is the Organized Blind Movement. The history of blind people is largely unrecorded, but that which has been written has 2 elements. Prior to the time that the blind began to write their own history, a few blind people were recorded as possessing inspiring characteristics of courage, perception, and endurance. Some of these blind people were said to have extraordinary extrasensory powers, but the blind as a group had no history. One of the books about phenomenal blind people is entitled From Homer to Helen Keller. Homer was the Greek poet who composed the Iliad and the Odyssey. He was blind. Helen Keller was the deaf-blind woman from the United States who learned to speak and to write despite her disabilities. The most well-known documentary about her life is the movie The Miracle Worker. That Helen Keller learned to speak and to write is regarded as a miracle. Annie Sullivan, the tutor of Helen Keller, created the miracle. The remarkable story of Helen Keller is remarkable, not because of her capacity, according to the movie, but because of the extraordinary ability of Annie Sullivan, who is the miracle worker. Let it be said that I am glad Helen Keller did the things she did. I am sorry that her accomplishments were belittled in the movie and that her success was attributed not to her ability, but to the extraordinary sagacity of Annie Sullivan. However, the assertion that the story of success is not attributable to the deafblind person, but to her miracle-working teacher is consistent with the myth of incapacity that has been a part of the history that has bedeviled the lives of the blind. Sighted people begin with the belief that they could not perform competently if they were to lose their vision, and they write the history to reflect this belief. Successful blind people must have extraordinary powers, they think, because the blind are incompetent. Any blind person who manages to exhibit success is, according to this formulation, magic or miraculous. This is the legacy of the miracle worker. In 1999, the National Federation of the Blind in the United States contemplated the construction of a new building that would house programs of research and education for the blind. In this new building, we plan to conduct research and education based upon the experiences of blind people. Most of the research about blindness has been conceived and directed by sighted people, and much of it has had no basis in the experiences of blind people. The difference between much of the research about blindness conducted in the past and that which we intended to conduct is that we would incorporate within it the individual daily experiences of blind people. In the course of discussing the impact of a research and training facility operated for the blind and by the blind, I talked about the need to ensure that the blind have access to information, to programs and activities of society, to training programs that teach the specialized techniques used by the blind, and to virtually all places of employment and almost every job. In making my presentation about this need, I indicated that a new method of thought is an essential element for programs of research and training for the blind. This element is the need to take account of the talent possessed by the blind, the alternative methods that blind people use to gain and use information, and the daily experiences that blind people have. Among other things, I said that if a new technology were needed to assist the blind in getting at information, we would build it. Working with Ray Kurzweil, the inventor and futurist, we now have assisted in the development of the KNFB Reader Mobile, the cell phone that reads, taking information that exists in one form and changing it to another is a vital part of the future for all human beings in society. Today, we take a printed page and make it audible. Within a very few days, we will be taking the language of a printed page and making it auditory in another language. Automatic translation from one language to another is now possible because we who are blind needed to transform a written pattern into an auditory one. Ray Kurzweil's inventive genius began with the recognition of our need to change one pattern of information to another, the printed page to a spoken page. The same pattern of basic information can be transformed in multiple ways, from print to speech, and from print to speech in more than one language. The reading machine benefits reading disabled people, the blind, the dyslexic, and those who find it difficult to read for other reasons. The translation software will benefit hundreds of millions. Despite all of the evidence that blind people possess ability, the capacity of the blind has routinely been written off. Decades ago, when I was studying law, I found myself one evening in a class on American tax law. The portable talking calculator had just been invented, and I had one of them to use for tax calculations. I decided to show it to my professor. I thought he might find it of interest, since it was the newest breakthrough in technology for the blind. As I placed the talking calculator on the professor's desk after the class had been dismissed, and as I performed a calculation, he said in an offhand way, "That's interesting." Then he said, "By the way, what are you doing in this class?" I was startled by the question. I had imagined that students sign up for classes to learn about the subject matter being taught. I recognize that taxation is not a course of study that would stimulate everybody, but I have always thought that the management of money is a useful thing to know. Consequently, when the professor asked the question, it took me by surprise. However, he did not let me answer. He said, almost without a pause, "Oh, some of this will be useful in your divorce cases." In the vernacular in the United States, it was a put-down. The professor did not expect me to be able to handle more than the rudimentary elements of the taxation course. He did not expect me to be an expert in the subject he was teaching. He did not expect me to be able to handle complex legal matters. He assumed that the non-complicated routine portions of the law would be all that I could do. This comment is one of the elements that caused me to concentrate on advocacy and civil rights. This comment made me believe that I should challenge the assumptions of those in society who think that the blind have little ability and less will. This comment helped me decide that I should fight back. Another time, many years ago, a group of my blind friends and I tried to enter a restaurant in a small town in Middle America. The owner of the restaurant refused entrance to us, saying, "I don't want all those blind people in here. What will the rest of my customers think?" I was a much younger man in those days, and I had not been schooled in the thought process of advocacy. I did not take immediate action, and I have always regretted my passivity. However, I participated in a demonstration later, and I changed my method of thought. I decided that discrimination on the basis of blindness would not be tolerated, and I learned about the laws of the United States and about the methods of changing those laws. I have been heavily involved in creating legal principles prohibiting discrimination on the basis of disability for many decades, and I have been supporting challenges in court to discriminatory action for more than 35 years. The laws in the United States to protect the rights of blind people are better than they have ever been, but they are not adequate to meet the need. They do not assure access to educational materials. They do not protect the right of the blind to the use of technology that others take for granted. They do not assure equal opportunity to use educational testing facilities and systems. And they permit educational testers to flag test results if they are taken in non-visual ways. In many instances, manufacturers of devices may knowingly produce them in inaccessible ways. Universities do not provide equal access to education, and the computers used in elementary schools are unusable by blind students. Fewer than 10% of blind children are being taught Braille in my country, and automobiles are being manufactured that are so quiet that the blind cannot hear them. Near misses and collisions have occurred, and the manufacturers have been very slow to take our complaints seriously. If blind people have ability, and I believe they do, this implies that we also possess power. Untrained, unfocused, undirected power has little practical use. However, the beginning of power is the recognition by blind people that this characteristic is ours. In 1985, airline companies in the United States were following a set of practices that became anathema to the blind. Blind people were having their canes forcibly removed from them. Blind people were being assigned seats in various parts of the plane, including the exit row, and then being ordered to move either without explanation or in the name of safety. Only a limited number of blind people were permitted to board a specific aircraft, sometimes two, sometimes three, sometimes four. Maybe airline officials thought that too many blind people on a single airplane would be infectious to the other passengers. Blind people were ordered to sit on blankets because some people thought we could not control our bowels. When blind people objected to these belittling treatments, they were either thrown off the plane or arrested. We filed discrimination complaints, but much of the time they were ineffective. We asked the Congress of the United States to introduce legislation to protect the rights of the blind in air travel, and eventually the Air Carrier Access Act was adopted. However, some of the provisions that we felt were necessary to protect the rights of blind travelers were eliminated at the last minute. I led a demonstration of several hundred blind people in the Capitol outside the Senate chamber to demand that the rights of blind people be recognized. Before we were finished, 58 members of the Senate had voted with us. When one of our members was thrown off a plane at National Airport in Washington, D.C., we put together a public demonstration seeking to board the aircraft and to take the seat that our member had been assigned, whether the airline liked it or not. We were almost aboard the plane when airline personnel locked us out. So we put a picket line around the airline's customer service check-in desks. Our protest was also mounted in other airports around the United States. The attempt to board the plane and our picket line at National Airport were carried on nationwide television. The airlines agreed not to have us arrested, and discrimination in most aspects of air travel was prohibited by law. Can blind people be farmers, factory workers, lawyers, teachers, business executives, warehouse workers, college professors, scientists, political activists, or shoemakers? The answer is undoubtedly yes. Can blind people be medical doctors? Or, if we build the right type of technology, can the blind fly planes or drive automobiles? I have met a number of blind doctors, and I have faith that they perform in the medical profession with skill and effectiveness. Would I hire a blind doctor? Indeed, I would. I would hire the doctor who possessed the ability to understand and treat whatever medical condition was then to be addressed. Not long ago, a blind woman with several college degrees, one of them in biology, sought to enter nursing school. The school told her that she was prohibited from applying because no blind person could safely perform the duties of a nurse. The nursing school said this despite the reality that there are a number of blind nurses working in the medical profession today. The school said this without giving the blind applicant the opportunity to demonstrate her ability or show officials in the school the techniques she intended to use to perform the essential tasks of nursing. The school said this without making any inquiries within the medical profession about the performance of blind medical professionals. We in the National Federation of the Blind fought the discriminatory rejection of this applicant's request to become a participant in the nursing class. The student in question was admitted to the nursing school, where she successfully performed during the first year of classwork assigned to her. Although some blind people have performed some of the tasks in driving a car and flying a plane, I myself have done both, the technology has not been perfected to permit blind people without assistance to operate these vehicles. However, we believe that the basic form of the technology to do both things has been invented. Object avoidance systems are currently installed in robots. Pattern recognition systems have been built into the guidance equipment in the most modern aircraft. Global positioning technology is now accurate to within a few feet. If all of this technology were built into an automobile, it could be used to travel safely using an operator with no vision at all. All that remains to be done is to develop the interface that can be used by blind people and to modify the legislation that exists to permit the blind to use it. In my opinion, the second part of this challenge is bigger than the first. Compared with the fear of permitting a blind person to slip behind the wheel, building the technology to permit the blind person to drive the car will be simple. The beginning of the possession of power is the assertion that it belongs to us. I want us to have power. Furthermore, in my own country, I face challenges that cannot be solved within the borders of my own nation. I need the cooperation and the power of others around the world to bring equality to the blind of the United States. And I believe that those of us in the United States can help bring equality to the blind of the world. I want cars on our streets that are safe for us. I want technology that all of us can use. I want educational programs that acknowledge our talent. I want laws that recognize the value that we have and uphold our right to participate fully in all of the activities in the communities in which we live. I want support for the value of blind people in the infrastructure of every nation. This means recognition that we deserve top quality education and the best rehabilitation training that can be devised. We cannot take advantage of these educational programs unless there is a minimum amount of support to ensure that we have the means to live. It is hard to learn when you're hungry. The standards for manufacture of products are becoming global. The regulatory systems that determine access to information are also becoming global. If we are to accept the role of powerful people, we must gain this status from each other. First, we must dream about making the world that will include all of us and will be more productive for us and for others than it has ever previously been. Then, we demand that others share this dream. Power takes many forms. Sometimes it is financial, sometimes it is political, and sometimes it possesses other characteristics. However, one element is vital to the acquisition of power. This element is that the blind will behave in ways that are spectacularly different from those that other people predict. We will assert our right to positions of authority. We will assert our right to equal access to information and programs that use it. We will assert our right to be paid for the talent we possess. We will assert our right to use that talent and to be incorporated fully into all aspects of daily life. This will create misunderstanding and annoyance. Many will believe that we should stay in our places, accept the gifts, however meager, that others offer, and remain the unseen, unwanted burden that they have always regarded us. But this is not the role for us. Despite the unpredictability of the behavior here described, despite the uncertainty it will create, despite the upheaval inherent within an altered pattern of living, we will demand our equal place. With the increase in this unpredictability goes chaos, but also inherent within unpredictability is the value of individual freedom and the joy of creation. This, Mr. President, and members of the World Blind Union, is what I recommend, not peace, but activism, not acceptance, but an insistence on our right to full participation, not isolation and custody, but freedom.
That was Mark Maurer, president of the National Federation of the Blind, presenting a keynote speech entitled Federationism in the World. You are listening to coverage of the 7th General Assembly of the World Blind Union, provided to you by ACB Radio at ACB Radio World, and you can reach us by contacting convention at acbradio.org.
Thank you, Dr. Maurer.
Email or MSN.
I've been at all the WBU General Assemblies, and I've never witnessed such a rousing applause. The future vision of the World Blind Union is synonymous with the future vision of blind people. And I think this session has been an extension of the session with Leslie Ann yesterday, because our philosophy is part of our movement. Thank you, and I'm now going to vacate the platform for the next session, which will be chaired by Dr. Susan Spungen. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. President. To start this session off, I would like to welcome Philip Baum, who will be making a report this morning. Philip?
Thank you, Chair. The nominations committee received only one nomination for the position of president. And before we continue with the applause, let me complete the procedure. There are some formalities to be completed. The 7th General Assembly Nominations Committee confirms that the nomination of Mrs. Marianne Diamond of Australia for the position of President were found to be in compliance with the requirements of the World Blind Union Constitution, and we accordingly submit the nomination for the election process, and I hand that over to the chairperson or to the electoral officer, Dr. Jeff Gibbs.
Thank you, Jeff. Fellow delegates, ladies and gentlemen, as Philip says, there is a formality to go through, but we have received the report of the Nominations Committee, and as an assembly, we are satisfied that their recommendation does conform with all aspects of the Constitution. There being one nomination only, I ask you to confirm the election of Marianne Diamond of Australia as the 7th President of the World Blind Union.
Marianne Diamond has been extremely helpful in coordinating our broadcast. Vision Australia is our partner with this broadcast, both in person power and financially.
At this time, I would like to invite the 7th President of the World Blind Union to come to the podium to offer a few words.
She is a delightful person and always seems very
willing. After receiving a hug from Penny Harton, is escorted to the podium
to greet people and assist, and there seems to be no problem Marianne can't find a way to solve, and that's a great trait.
She receives a hug from President Roland.
And that is the voice of Joel Snyder, who is describing.
And from Mr. Baum.
Ladies and gentlemen, distinguished guests, our past presidents, I feel very honoured and privileged to join a very select and special group of people, those that have led the World Blind Union. And it's particularly pleasing that almost all of our past presidents are here today in this room for this occasion. Without their dedication, expertise and contribution to the World Blind Union, we would not be here today and made the achievements we have. I'll share with you, though, an observation. When I think of those that have come before me, I am the second person from Australia to be elected. I am the second woman to be elected. But I'd like to assure you, I don't intend to do a second-rate job. For those who have put themselves forward to be part of the leadership team, and we will elect over the next few days, I wish every one of you the best of luck. It's wonderful that so many people are willing to put themselves forward to be part of such a wonderful team. On Friday, I understand I have the opportunity to address you again, and at that time, I'd like to share some of my thoughts with you to add to the mix of where we may go in the next 4 years. Thank you very much for your warm applause and the support that many and all of you have given me over the last 4 years and since I declared that I would be a candidate for the presidency. Thank you very much.
And if time permits, during the lunch interval, you will hear from some of those past presidents in an interview we recorded last night, which was very, very interesting indeed. And I think we'll probably bring that just after 10 hours UTC, after the interview we're doing then.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just an announcement about the nomination for the first vice president. The nominations close at 5:30 this evening. 5:30, and thereafter the nominations committee will meet. If you require nomination forms, you can obtain that from me or the office, but I'm walking around with them in my briefcase at 5:30 exactly, and then we will announce the nominations tomorrow morning. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you. What a happy occasion. Congratulations. I now have the honor of chairing the session where we will hear from each of the regions as to the activities in their respective areas. I would like to ask that each regional chair, regional president, come forward to the podium to make their presentation so there will be no difficulty in hearing what they have to say. The first regional chair will be Paul Tizzano, regional president of Africa. Paul, would you please come forward?
I would kindly ask that all the other speakers for the regional meetings come already to the front so that we can proceed rapidly. So there would be Amer Makarem for Asia, Kua Chenghok for Asia-Pacific, Lord Colin Lowe for Europe, the president of ULAC for Latin America, James Gibbons for North America and the Caribbean, and Kiki Nordstrom for the report of the Women's Forum. Thank you.
Bonjour. Good morning. Buenos dias. Good morning. My name is Paul Tizzano, and I'm also called BB, that is blind and black. I'm not an orator. I'm just a doer. Permit me, ladies and gentlemen, to invite one of our able-sighted assistants to present my report, briefly the work you're expecting from my region. It is a summary report because a full detailed report is well available upon request. I will then call upon Cathy Belgeveld to present this report. Thank you very much.
Cathy,
you have the floor.
Thank you. Mr. President of the World Blind Union, Madam Chairperson, distinguished delegates, ladies and gentlemen, the quadrennial report of the African Union of the Blind, or AFUB, as it's known to, highlights developments in the areas of policy, programs, and other initiatives that have been embarked upon and accomplished with the support of donor partners and African governments during the period 2005-2008. Due to time constraints, I will not list here our many development and financial partners and projects, but as Paul has said, they are all included in our written report available upon request from the Secretariat. Allow me nevertheless to mention by name the Norwegian Association of the Blind and Partially Sighted, the NABP. We thank them particularly, and others as well, for their invaluable support over these years. This oral presentation of the report will focus on the AFUB's strategic commitments over the past 4 years and the extent to which they were met. It will then briefly outline the challenges encountered and the priorities established for the forthcoming period. Our action and objectives have rested on the AFUB's vision, which is that of, and I quote, a continent where blind and partially sighted persons enjoy equal rights, social inclusion, and full participation in development. The mission of our union, the mission that our union has set itself, is to create organizations of and for the blind in countries where they do not yet exist on our continent, to strengthen existing members' organizations, and to create unity of purpose among them through capacity building and advocacy in partnership with governments, international agencies, and other stakeholders. The overall goal of the AFUB for the period 2005-2008 was to consolidate program achievements and to improve the union's institutional capacity for better service delivery so that the participation of blind and partially sighted people in the decision-making process at all levels would be enhanced. The strategic areas focused upon during this quadrennial included institutional development, capacity building for national organizations of the blind, promotion of cooperation among these organizations, promotion of human rights, and elimination of all forms of discrimination against the visually impaired, HIV/AIDS awareness, women and youth empowerment, income generation and sustainability of national organizations of the blind, promotion of literacy among blind and partially sighted persons, and development cooperation and networking. I would now like to refer more specifically to a few of these key strategic areas. I'll start with institutional development. The union sought to strengthen its capacity to develop, implement, and monitor relevant programs. Accordingly, AFUB staff and the new board of officers, elected at the close of 2004, underwent various training sessions in relevant skills, including strategic planning, logical framework analysis, visioning and missioning, communication, policy formulation, and networking. The union also aimed at developing and reviewing relevant organizational policies. Policies on human resources and financial management were further developed and operationalized. At the beginning of 2005, the AFUB had only 3 staff members. By the end of the quadrennial, our union strength had grown to 8 staff members supported by a cross-section of volunteers as and when appropriate. It was also planned during the 4 years under review for AFUB to establish a data bank and equip it with relevant information materials. This was realized by appointing a membership liaison and data management officer responsible for collecting information from AFUB member organizations, maintaining and updating the AFUB website, and ensuring all documents are in English and in French for easy access by AFUB members. An objective also targeted was to widen the AFUB's resource base, mainly through appraising prospective funding partners and developing fundable proposals. This was pursued with diligence to the extent that, for instance, the AFUB's financial strength gradually rose and nearly doubled between 2004 and 2007. Another important strategic area, capacity building for national organizations of the blind, is aimed at strengthening the capacity of the AFUB's 24 national member organizations by providing training to their leaders in strategic planning, policy monitoring, and management skills, while consistently ensuring equitable gender distribution at each training forum. Over the period, leadership and advocacy seminars were delivered to some 15 member organizations with funding support from the NABP in countries including Madagascar, Algeria, Nigeria and Togo, Mauritania, Mozambique, Egypt, Chad, Tunisia, Botswana, Liberia and DRC Congo, and Burundi, finally, in 2008. In essence, 300 individuals with the 15 member organizations have had their outlook on socioeconomic and organizational issues positively changed. A third key strategic area is that of HIV/AIDS. During the period under review, the AFUB implemented an HIV/AIDS project aimed at reducing the incidence of HIV/AIDS among blind and partially sighted persons in Africa by increasing their participation in HIV awareness and control programs in their communities. The project targeted 6 countries, Cameroon, Ghana, Kenya, Malawi, Rwanda, and Tanzania, and was implemented in partnership with the Canadian National Institute for the Blind. During the duration of the project, 6 training of trainers workshops were conducted in the 6 countries. 119 blind and partially sighted persons, 71 women and 48 men, were trained to become HIV/AIDS peer educators. Then there is the relevant strategic area of women and youth empowerment. During this 4-year period, the AFUB planned and implemented women capacity building projects with the assistance of SRF, NABP, and DAB. The women capacity building project by SRF, for example, was designed to furnish women leaders with skills and attitudes in leadership, organizational development, advocacy, and lobbying, entrepreneurship, and networking. The project reached and had direct impact on a total of 180 women with visual impairment.
2 more minutes.
And last but not least, income generation and sustainability. The AFUB considers this to be one of its most crucial strategic areas. Income generation and sustainability aim at facilitating member organizations to become self-reliant and less dependent on donor funding. It is regrettable to note, however, that compared to funding efforts elsewhere, investing in income-generating activities for greater economic empowerment of organizations and their individual members is relatively less significant. Income generation capacity building through skills training should be followed by financial support so that the visually impaired beneficiaries could immediately put to use the skills acquired. But this, unfortunately, is rarely the case. Madam Chairperson, in a nutshell, the challenges encountered. There were many, but they include the huge continental mandate of the AFUB vis-a-vis a reality of meager resources. Through democratic and best practices, the leadership of member organizations is constantly and regularly changing, a good thing, but which inevitably calls for training and retraining. Communication, finally, within member organizations is not as effective as would be required. This is often due to poor communication infrastructure, limited personnel, and lack of adequate resources. To conclude, Madam, a few words on our priorities for 2009-2012. We wish to acquire and strengthen our own office premises, to strengthen access to communication facilities among AFUB member countries, providing adequate training so as to improve their overall communicating system, develop the capacity of member organizations to advocate for equal access in the field of HIV/AIDS and reproductive health programs, to promote income-generating activities to stimulate economic empowerment among AFUB membership and its individual affiliates, and last but not least, Madam, to further develop advocacy and lobbying skills within the AFUB's emerging leaders, men, women, and youth, so as to ensure appropriate implementation of the United Nations Convention on the Rights of Disabled People. Thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you very much. I'm about to ask the impossible, which is, as you realize in your programs, each report is only to be of 10 minutes in length, but they are also being translated. And I think many of us, including myself, in order to stay within the 10 minutes, talk very quickly. And for translators, that is too much of a challenge, and much is lost in the translation. So I would ask that you please speak slowly, but also remain within the 10-minute period. I next would like to call up the regional president for ABUB Asia, Amar Makaram, for your regional report. Unfortunately, we will continue looking for him, but we will go on with the program and ask now the president, regional president of Asia Pacific, Jen Hock, to please come forward for his regional report.
Come up here. Desk is just in front of you.
Okay, the stand is here. Okay, can I just now? Now.
Mr. Hawk approaches the podium with his Labrador.
Thank you, Dr. Spungen. A very good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Everybody's going to sleep. Hello. Good morning. What a wonderful day. The victory for Asia Pacific. What a wonderful day. Today we celebrate the new president from our region, Mrs. Marianne Diamond.
Ah, yeah. Oh, there we go.
I am so proud to be the outgoing chair, to see her come in as the new region. It is a testimony to the work of both our national affiliate and the region in opportunities that we extend for equal participation to all, whether male or female, and we are glad that a second president from the region is available now to serve this region and to take the World Blind Union forward. I do not have a very lengthy report to read to you. Some of my comments have already been incorporated into the report that was out. What I will do today is to just summarize a few points that I would like to bring to your attention. Like most of our regions, we depend heavily on partnerships, and we are glad that even from within the World Blind Union itself, my region has received wonderful support and partnerships from organizations like the Norwegian Association of the Blind and Partially Sighted, the NABP, for many years. Their work in our region lately has culminated in two new members being added into our region, and you were given the privilege of welcoming Lao PDR and Timor-Leste yesterday, two of our newest members in the region. We are also very grateful and glad that as we have organizations coming into being in our region, and many more to go, we need a lot of work in capacity building. And the work in the capacity building funded by DANIDA through the support and assistance of the Danish Association of the Blind started in 2006. It will go on for another a year and a half, and we look forward to a regional vision conference that will provide an opportunity to further help countries in our region that are new and need various capacities to bring the organization into more vibrancy. We will also be working on networking between members and affiliates to provide both financial and human resources in the work that we do. We have also been fortunate that our own affiliates have been supportive to the regional work with their contributions of projects and funds. I would like to acknowledge here that the region has benefited tremendously from a very graceful benefactor, Mrs. Taruko Akida, who has given a lot of support to our region. For the past 4 to 5 years, she has been donating 8 computers with JAWS and a braille display and a computer to young people and providing them a month of training in our region. Both members from the ABU and the Asia Blind and the Asia Pacific. When the tsunami hit the region at the end of 04, after the close of the Cape Town Assembly, 3 of our affiliates were assisted by her with a grant of 100,000 to be shared, 90,000 to be shared by the 3 countries to help bring back some normalcy into the lives of blind people affected by that disaster. And that was also fortunate that she looked to the region to coordinate this gift. We are also very glad that the promotion of Braille literacy was active in our region through the Minuchi and Onkyo Braille Reading Contest that was sponsored by Japan. From our own affiliates, we have the National Council of the Blind, who continue to help us in our secretarial work and provision of support, a seminar to help the sub-region in fundraising. We also had Vision Australia contribute some financial assistance to run some of our regional projects. We held our regional midterm regional assembly hosted in China in 07 and the massage seminar this year in China in May. We also appreciate the support from the Japan Federation of the Blind with the hosting of the massage seminar in year 06. We will continue to look towards internal resources, but we cannot continue to look for the fire extinguisher when there's a fire. So the need to now look at funds and self-sustainable activities will be one of our priorities in the coming term. During the year, we also had members facing difficult situations internally, and when the rights of blind masseurs to have the trade of massage protected for the blind in Korea was being removed in the year 2006, our president wrote to the Korean government on behalf of our affiliates to express our concern and the need of the blind. And we know that it was due to multiple efforts and concerted effort by the Korean Blind Union that within 3 months that rule was reversed. But we understand that the issue is still not closed and resolved. And after the massage seminar this year, our colleagues chairing the massage seminar from the Hong Kong Society for the Blind continue to write letters of support on behalf of the Korean Blind Union to the Korean government on that issue. We also express solidarity to Mongolia during the time of their difficulties when privileges and rights to the blind and disabled were removed, and also wrote letters of support when our other affiliate, Thailand, had some difficulties. The value of membership to the World Blind Union will continue to reveal itself if members know how to network and take advantage of the opportunities that this wonderful membership offers to each of our national affiliates. We will continue to strengthen our organization and look towards renewing ourselves with younger leaders. And we are very heartened that in our next board, there will be new blood and there will be continuing support from experienced and past leaders. Ladies and gentlemen, I would leave the rest of the report for you to read and for the regional members to ask me questions when we meet in the region later. So, Madam Chairman, thank you very much, and I look forward to meeting you again. Thank you.
Thank you, Chenok. I'd now like to call the Regional President of Europe, Lord Colin Lowe, to the podium for his regional report.
You're listening to coverage of the 7th General Assembly of the World Blind Union on ACB Radio World. Should you wish to get in touch with us by email or MSN, it's convention@acbradio.org.
There's a lot to get through, so I'll get straight on with it. Starting with organisational matters, a cooperation agreement was concluded with the Centre for the Blind in Israel in 2005, and it's gratifying that we've been able to find a regional home for the State of Israel in this way. A very successful General Assembly was held in Antalya, Turkey, in October 2007. A notable feature of the Assembly was two series of workshops in which delegates were able to discuss the Board's report for the period 2003 to 2007, the draft strategic plan for 2007-11, and the implications for blind and partially sighted people of the rights conferred by the UN Convention. The Assembly was preceded by an equality and diversity forum incorporating women's, elderly, and youth strands. This demonstrated some very exciting interactions between the different strands. For example, knowledge sharing between the generations on things like technology. There are some models here that may be of interest to the WBU more generally. Sticking with equality and diversity, the culture of equality is growing within EBU. Equality and diversity is now a prominent consideration in making appointments to commissions. The board has been keen to give precedence to nominations from equalities groups, and equalities monitoring of appointments now takes place to provide a gauge of progress. The Constitution has been amended to establish a credentials committee with power to recommend sanctions against national members whose delegations do not comply with the gender balance provisions of the Constitution. During the period under review, the board appointed a champion for issues of partial sight and asked all commissions to appoint an equality and diversity champion to promote issues of partial sight as well as other equality issues. The enthusiasm of a nucleus of talented young people made youth work one of the real successes of the period. Good use was made of the European Union's youth programme to fund events for blind and partially sighted young people, including the youth strand within the Equality and Diversity Forum. Members of the elderly working group were active in emphasising sight loss issues at mainstream older people's events and issues of ageing at mainstream blindness events. And they've also evaluated the training given to rehabilitation workers on the needs of elderly people and to care staff in homes for older people on the needs of visually impaired people. These issues will continue to be a priority in the next work period, given the high proportion of elderly people in the visually impaired population. In order to impose less strain on the translators and fulfil the chairman's requirement, I am going to read the next paragraph. On the 1st of May 2004, 10 countries joined the European Union, and two more followed on the 1st of January 2007. Ensuring that blind and partially sighted people in these countries experience the full benefits of EU membership is a high priority for EBU. It's too early to draw firm conclusions, but the indications are that the benefits of increased prosperity are beginning to flow towards these new members, and it's to be hoped that conditions for blind and partially sighted people will improve as a consequence. Greater equality between Western, Central and Eastern Europe is a high priority for EBU. In pursuance of this, a capacity building working group has been set up. Its work is still at an early stage. The idea of an EBU development fund has been proposed and a feasibility study completed. Implementing this is a high priority for the current work period. Now, I am going to gloss over the steps taken to raise the profile of the European Union, of the EBU, and get on to policy and campaigning, which is at the heart of EBU's work. We've done a great deal here in the last 4 years, and I can really only give you a flavour of what we've done. The UN Convention on the Rights of Disabled People has been a major focus of work during the period, but I won't say any more about this at this moment because I did speak quite a bit about that yesterday and the database that we're setting up in order to monitor member states' compliance with the UN Convention. We've done much work to promote employment for blind and partially sighted people. We brought out a 6-point plan for implementing the European Employment Strategy so that it takes account of the needs of blind and partially sighted people. Following this, we've held discussions with the European Commission to promote the idea that blind and partially sighted people need to have access to a range of opportunities extending from fully integrated to sheltered employment, what we call the employment continuum. Those applying for funds to support employment in the European Union's most deprived regions must now comply with the principles of access and non-discrimination on grounds of disability. And finally, on employment, to provide encouragement to those looking for a career, EBU's website now contains details of 75 jobs actually undertaken by blind and partially sighted people. Moving on to the field of mobility and transport, we have developed proposals for reciprocity of travel concessions for the visually impaired across Europe, supported by an identity card validating entitlement. We've also produced a number of policy papers on issues such as roads, crossings, public buildings and transport. In 2006, the EU brought in a regulation on the rights of passengers with reduced mobility when travelling by air. This introduces a number of protections, for example, against denial of boarding, except in very limited circumstances, and provides for end-to-end assistance from the point of arrival at the airport at the beginning of a journey to the point of departure at the end. EBU's director, Mokran Boussaid, played a significant part on behalf of blind and partially sighted people in the negotiations leading to the regulation and in the drafting of guidance. With Louis Braille's bicentenary coming up, EBU has undertaken a number of activities to highlight the importance of Braille. The EU issued a directive which came into effect in October 2006, requiring new medicines to be labelled in Braille and patient information leaflets to be made available in accessible form. EBU issued guidelines on its implementation. We launched a declaration in support of Braille at the General Assembly, and we ran the European strand of the Onkyo Braille Essay Contest, sponsored by two Japanese newspaper concerns, on the theme Braille Literacy Changes My Way of Life. There was an outstanding response, which powerfully and movingly demonstrated the importance of Braille as a force for liberation in the lives of blind people. Finally, on behalf of WBU, we staged an event for Mother Language Day, the 21st of February 2005, organized by UNESCO in Paris, to promote the importance of Braille as a gateway to literacy for people with a visual impairment. Extensive lobbying has taken place to ensure that free post services for blind and partially sighted people are protected under the revised directive, which is currently being brought in by the European Union. And finally, against heavy lobbying by the industry, we've got a provision in the new Audiovisual Media Service Directive requiring member states to encourage the development of TV access services such as audio description and report on progress every 3 years. So I hope that by the next time my successor makes a report to you on what the European region has been up to, he or she will be able to report further progress on that front. Madam Chairman, ladies and gentlemen, that concludes my report. Thank you very much.
I would now like to ask Amer Makaram, Regional President, to come forward for his regional report, which will be read by Nadia Blanchard, Stage Manager for this conference. Amer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ladies and gentlemen, I will present my report through Madam Nadia, because I don't have my papers in Braille. Thank you for listening to my presentation.
Ladies and gentlemen, I have the pleasure to read you the quadrennial report on Asian Blind Union activities from January 05 to April 08, prepared by Amer Makaram, immediate past president of ABU. The main activity areas of ABU during this quadrennium are collection and dissemination of information, translation of important documents into Russian and Arabic languages, advocacy-related activities, capacity building, providing developmental opportunities to blind women and youth in the region, effective preparation of some crucial required professionals, promoting IT-based facilities and opportunities among needy affiliates and extending support to various affiliates, organizing Onkyo Braille essay competition and raising limited additional resources. The main activities implemented by ABU in these areas are as follows. For the meetings, 5 meetings of the Union's EXCO and 5 officers' meetings took place during this period in different countries. Many ABU officers participated in different meetings of CBU EXCO committee, board of officers and committees. Advocacy. A manual of advocacy is prepared and made available in English, Arabic, and Russian. 3 sub-regional advocacy workshops are organized each of three days duration during 2005. 59 representatives, 38 male, 21 female, from 19 countries attended these workshops. Leadership training. A 4-day leadership training seminar was organized for Central Asian countries. 15 leaders from the 4 Central Asian countries participated in the event, out of whom 5 were women. The union conducted three sub-regional youth conferences during 2006. One for Central Asia countries, where 16 representatives participated. The second conference for South Asia, which was attended by 24 representatives. The third for Middle East sub-region, which attended by 30 representatives. Education. A low vision training workshop was conducted in New Delhi in 2006. The workshop was attended by 21 representatives, 11 female, 10 male, 11 male, sorry, 10 female from six South Asian countries. Research projects completed. During 2006, the Children's Committee of ABU concluded a research project titled Comparative Study of the Learning Achievements of the Visually Impaired Persons Studying in Both Special as Well as Inclusive Settings, and finalized its report on the same. The project was conducted in three countries, India, Nepal, and Jordan. A five-day training workshop for in-service teachers working with blind children was held for Central Asian countries in 2007. 17 representatives attended the program. A seminar on inclusive education for the Middle East was held at Amman, Jordan, for 3 days in 2007. The program was attended by 33 representatives, 16 male, 17 female. As a further measure, to help affiliates, a training course in the repair and maintenance of Perkins Braillers and Index Printers was held in New